Tom may do a news story, and then we'll go to you.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love, just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Well, you know, one of the things we've begun 2017, and I'm just going to speak for a moment about how important this is to Catholic Charities, the organization that I'm very proud and privileged to work for, because this is our 100th anniversary of helping people in need and helping them to live their lives better. So this is our centennial in 2017, and we're just delighted to be able to celebrate it. And while we're going to kind of remember some of the great things that were done over those 100 years, but more importantly, we're going to be looking to what we're going to do even more to help people going forward. So today on our Just Love show, we're going to have two guests who are going to kind of help us to talk about that. One, I'm delighted, the first guest in just a few minutes will go to Brendan Ryan, who is one of the trustees of Catholic Charities, probably for the past decade or so, and who has had a very, very distinguished career in marketing and in communications for decades. And any of you who are insomniacs, you may want to remember that not only do you not sleep, but the city never sleeps. And that is one of the contributions that Brendan made to our kind of contemporary vocabulary. So I'm delighted, most especially, that Brendan is a trustee of Catholic Charities, generous, insightful, committed, and we're going to talk with him a little bit about what the centennial means to him and his kind of connection with Catholic Charities. Then a little bit later in the show, we're going to kind of, listeners, let you know that when we talk about the fact that we're not resting on our laurels, but we're looking at what's we're going to do going forward to help people in need, we're going to speak with Bill Baccalini, who is the executive director of the New York Foundling, one of those really premier Catholic Charities affiliated agencies in New York that actually has been around for even longer than 100 years. It goes back to the mid 19th century. And so some of those Catholic charitable agencies are even longer than the 100-year history of the formal establishment of Catholic Charities in New York. So what we're going to talk with Bill about is, again, one of those great centennial initiatives, which looks at the need of kids in foster care, not to have a dead end, but to have a bright future. And so we're going to talk about what I've entitled his Dorming for Success program to help them to kind of get into college and get through college. So I'm delighted that both Brendan Ryan and Bill Baccalini will be with us as we're kind of going to talk a little bit about Catholic Charities' 100-year legacy of providing help and launching the next years of kind of creating hope for New Yorkers in need. But, you know, there is a world outside of New York, although some of us in New York, we get a little provincial about it, and sometimes we maybe don't realize that. Tom, we got any news items that you want to share with our listeners?
You know, we do, Monsignor. You know, you mentioned the world outside of New York. We're talking about Catholic Charities. And, you know, there's a great partnership, Monsignor, that's going on right now in Italy, in Rome, as a matter of fact. There's a medical association that's affiliated with the church. It's called Medicina Solidare.
Your Italian is just this great
time. I'm trying, you know, I would say the best I can here.
Yeah, you're trying. it is trying to listen to you do Italian, let me tell you.
And I would say, and this group, which is a medical group of doctors who in Rome volunteer to take care of the homeless, have undertaken a program where they're going to be feeding homeless people in and around St. Peter's Square from starting now in early January all the way up through June. And interestingly, the partner that they have is McDonald's. Now,
Yay.
I would say you may or may not know that actually a McDonald's opened to some controversy right outside of St. Peter's Square just about a month and a half ago.
So what was the controversy? Is this another one of those churches we don't like anything that's happy and good? We want it to be austere, is that what?
Sort of, Monsignor. I think it was, instead of like austere, I think they were worried it was going to be a little cheesy, pardon the pun, with McDonald's. And I was going
to
say,
what, they wanted pizza? They wanted cheese opposed to?
That was some of it, I think. Okay. I think some of it had to do with there were some people around who were saying, oh, McDonald's is so outside. Italy is known for its, you know, its phenomenal cuisine. And how can they offer McDonald's? And I think they saw it as a little bit tawdry. So really, it was some controversy surrounding.
Some of those who think that haven't been to Rome and seen tawdry at its height in some places.
for sure. And interestingly, what McDonald's has offered to do is they're going to actually be offering for free for these homeless individuals living in around St. Peter's Square the first 1,000 meals. So
the most important issue. I know you checked out the menu.
Yes.
They got pasta on the menu?
They have pasta on the menu.
Ah, so, I mean, what are they complaining about, okay? It's not too bad. How about wine?
No, they don't. They actually don't serve
wine.
Which I was surprised at. I know.
But they have
a lot of coffee.
Don't they have wine in the McDonald's in Paris?
They do. They have wine. I checked it out. They do serve wine in McDonald's in France. So France has the wine. Italy does not have the wine.
Yes, he's got the pasta. You know, this is why Catholic Charities, we always like partnerships.
There you go.
I think if we partner the pasta in Rome mm-hmm. with the wine in France, I think we got a good meal out of this deal.
I like it, Monsignor.
And even more so, that kind of they're doing something to help some of the homeless, some of the hungry people in Rome.
Exactly.
What more could it be? Pasta, wine, helping the I like it. I'm against the people who don't like it and think it's tawdry. I think it's a good idea to have pasta. I think it's a good idea to help people. So it's good. So, Tom, why don't we go to our first guest?
Sounds great.
Hey, Brendan, thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Brendan Ryan, who has had a very long and distinguished career in marketing communications as the head of a number of firms that merged and came together, did that for a while. Brendan, so tell us, I mean, we could go on for decades about your marketing career, but tell us how you kind of have gotten involved in Catholic Charities.
Well, I really got formally involved about 10 years ago, just as I was finishing being CEO of Footcon & Belding. I had time available, which you don't have as a global CEO. And Monsignor Sullivan, yourself, you came, and Victor Menendez came to me and said, gee, Cardinal Egan actually is thinking that the board would benefit from having some marketing expertise on the board. And historically, most boards were made up of finance people. But in today's new world, it's a very competitive arena, even for charitable institutions. And one of the ways you make your charity the preferred one for people to donate to volunteer for is getting the word out in a better, more compelling way. I got on the board. And then we formed a marketing committee and an executive committee. So anyway, it's been a great 10 years. And what I love about it, and when people ask me why I like being on this board, I'm on some other ones as well, it's because I think I was chosen because of my experience, my abilities, and that's what's really wanted. Yes, people want you to donate money, of course, but it's one of the few boards where there's a real value ascribed to people on the board for their expertise. And I think it's helped make Catholic Charities a more effective organization. Not me, but the whole board does that.
Well, I think, Brendan, thank you for saying that, but thank you so much for your participation. And I do think, and you know, maybe you have some reflections on this, I think sometimes we do-gooders think that everybody should kind of just roll over, open their pocketbooks, should just cheer. And I don't know that we do enough to tell the story of what we do, how we do it, and why it's important that we do it.
Couldn't agree more. And that's really the essence of what marketing is about. And it's interesting to me, there are so many charitable enterprises just in the city of New York as well as globally. And it's essential that you get your story out there in a compelling way. And I was struck by, honestly, my history with Catholic Charities, I was just recalling this earlier, goes back something like, embarrassed to say, over 60 years. I was a kid in Immaculate Conception Grammar School down on 14th Street. And my dad was active in Immaculate Conception Parish and was the head of the Catholic Charities Drive that was an annual event every year. And I go back all the way that far to understanding how it was such a vital part of our community and doing so much good. And then, but even at that, I know I lost my train of thought. Even at that point in time, I wasn't really aware of what it did. He collected money for something called Catholic Charities. And then fast forward 50, 60 years, I still, and I'm a practicing reasonably good Catholic, and I'm kind of aware of what's going on. But other than those two words up at the very top of this pyramid, I really wasn't aware of what we actually do. And over the last several years, I've become much more aware of that. And the degree to which Catholic Charities permeates every single corner of life and society in New York City is staggering. And even people on the board today are not fully aware of all we do. And certainly the audience we want to reach out to the political world who decide where a lot of money gets spent, to donors, to volunteers, and importantly, to people who need help. That's a very important part of what we do. And if people desperately needing help in immigration affairs, housing, don't know where to go, it just makes it all less than effective.
We're speaking with Brendan Ryan, who is a very valued trustee of Catholic Charities for the past decade and also was the CEO for a number of years of a global marketing firm. And we're delighted that he is with us. And we're talking because, you know, we're celebrating 100 years legacy of service of Catholic Charities in helping New Yorkers in need. And, you know, one of the things which we always try to communicate now is because we have Catholic in the title, sometimes people think, well, we only help Catholics. And gee, that's not the case. You know, we help people of all religions, and we help them because of our core Catholic belief. Our core Catholic belief is that every human being is made in the image and likeness of God. And therefore, how could we say if you're made in God's image and likeness, we're not going to help you just because you're not Catholic? But we always have to kind of communicate that as something that is at the height of our message, that people understand not only can they come to us for help, but if you help us, we're going to be helping everybody who we can in the community.
There was a great line, ad guys love lines, and there was a great line that Monsignor shared with us one time a while ago, and it said something along the lines, we don't help people because they're Catholic, we help them because we're Catholic. And I think that's a great statement of the philosophy of Catholic Charities. And I was stunned that frankly, more than half the people we help are not Catholic. And that's impressive, but it's also essential that that message get out, not only to people whom we want to help, but importantly to people who make big decisions about where to donate money, about where our government funds should be allocated. And that's, again, part of what we try to do.
You know, one of the messages that I think we've talked about that is critically important, especially in, I make no bones about it, we are living in an awful political environment at the moment. And I don't care who your candidate is, who you voted for, who you didn't vote for. It's awful. It just is. We yell at each other. We're disrespectful to each other. We don't have a great deal of integrity in public office. It's just awful. And we try to divide people from one another. And I think one of the messages that we try to communicate at Catholic Charities is there are people in need, and we're willing to partner with whomever, whether it be corporate America, whether it be government, whether it be labor, whether it be civic leaders. We want to bring people together to help people in need.
That's absolutely true. And as Monsignor says, in today's world, the lack of togetherness is extraordinary. I've never experienced it in my entire life. And what better way to bring people together than helping people? And I remember during the Sandy crisis here in New York, that was a great example of a lot of different charitable organizations rallying together, not worrying whose logo was on the banner in front of the food center or anything else, and really provided a tremendous amount of help to people suddenly and desperately in need. And that was a moment of Catholic Charities, I think, excellence, because one of the things that makes Catholic Charities of New York such a successful operation and so valuable is we're there every day. We have people on the ground doing what we do across the many services we provide, not just in a moment of heightened crisis like Sandy, but every day, so that when that big crush comes and the number of people desperately needing help dramatically soars, we are prepared to step right in and not only do what we've been doing, but doing it on a much grander scale. That was a great part of our effort in Sandy. And in fact, a lot of organizations, charitable organizations in the same arena, look to us for leadership on the ground in a lot of places around the city.
You know, Brendan, you kind of opened the door to that. And what I think you say is absolutely correct, that and because we're willing to work with everybody, sometimes we wind up in the middle of kind of pulling people from the left, from the right, from the top, from the bottom, and kind of trying to create that partnership that works. And again, you mentioned Sandy. So let me just kind of say to our listeners, after Sandy, hundreds of thousands of people were out of their homes because of the flooding, et cetera, et cetera. And fortunately, most people could get back together. They could get their lives together with help from government, from others, insurance, etc. But Catholic Charities coordinated with 17 other nonprofit agencies help for those families, those individuals who really struggled to get back. And at the end of a four-year period, Catholic Charities, with our 17 partners, had really helped more than 10,000 households who couldn't figure it out on their own and needed a little help from their neighbors to do it. And I think because we were there, we then could reach out and call people together. And again, you got to put everybody together. And, you know, Brendan probably will not tell this himself, but so many good neighbors rose up. Brendan went with his family out to the Rockaways to kind of do some immediate work of trying to help the people who were in need there. And that's part of the whole pulling the whole community together.
Yeah. Now, we did. Actually, it was my son that drove it. He went to Poly Prep, and some friends of his lived in the Rockaways. And these were kids, his classmates, who frankly didn't have a house. And here he's living fat, dumb, and happy up on the Upper East Side. But to his credit, he gathered a bunch of his friends together, and I went out once, but they went out every weekend for like 10 weekends. Bunch of guys helping one family re-sheetrock their house.
Yep.
Nobody knew.
And again, I'll tell you again, our ecumenical story is one of the people who were just so helpful were the Mennonites. They came out and they were very, very good, especially in that awful work, because whenever you have water, you can't stop water. I mean, water is just one of those real damaging things. So dredging out dirt and grime from people's basements, that was really, really hard work. And, you know, the other thing I'll mention about that, because the other group, the Mennonites were great, but Catholic Charities works with a lot of immigrant day laborers who line up every day on the street looking for a job, landscaping, looking for a repair job. Well, that group volunteered. They went out to Staten Island without getting paid, their own time to go out there and help people because they wanted to help.
Right.
So we're speaking with Brendan Ryan, who had been the CEO of one of the major marketing firms, global marketing firms, now is a trustee of Catholic Charities. Brendan, as you look at this kind of the environment of helping people and Catholic Charities, and given the world we live in and some of the changes that we're living in, what do you see as the future?
Well, I think it's going to become even more important. I think there are going to be more and more people who are going to need help, because as this whole technological revolution accelerates almost every day, there are going to people who going to be people who are not up to speed on it, and they are going to need help to not only get up to get up to speed and then be helped along. One of the things I love about Catholic Charities, and it's not ad guys love taglines. I had nothing to do with this tagline. It was there when I arrived. But it's such a good, simple summary. It says, what is Catholic Charities about? Providing help, creating hope. And it is the two parts that, to me, make it all work. The providing help is obvious and essential. But what you want to do, and again, back to the point of the technological revolution that's going on, what you want to be able to do is provide help to people to catch up. And we're doing more and more using applications, using cell phones, all those technology, even for the people who most need help. But the idea is not only to give them that help, but to ensure that they have the hope and real hope that as they get up that curve quickly, they're able to go ahead on their own and have the hope that they will be able to live a life like so many of us here that's comfortable and good for their children.
You know, that's why, and you did have some hint of this, when we said to people, how are we going to talk about our 100 years? How are we going to talk about a centennial? So we kind of, you know, came up with another little line where we talked about, to communicate that point, a legacy of help and a future of hope.
Right.
You know, and not only, you know, we kind of played with that phrase because the legacy is everything that Catholic Charities has done for 100 years and even beyond that. And the future of hope speaks about what we want to do in the way that we bring help to people. We want to bring help in a way that they can have a better future, not that they keep coming back and back right. and back again. And that's a critical part of how we kind of look at the services that we
right.
provide.
Right.
Would you say, as we look to the future, that there's going to be even more change in how we have to approach things going forward?
I absolutely think so. I am a maniac on the subject of change. I like to quote former Mayor Bloomberg, who said a couple of years ago in a talk that the next 4 years is going to see more change in everything about our lives than the prior 100. And when you think about the amount of change just in the last 10 years, it's kind of overwhelming, but it is the truth. And nobody's immune. I mean, think about Kodak and film, and you get some sense of what can happen. And even charitable organizations like the 90 organizations of Catholic Charities have to be rethinking as they sit there today what needs they're going to have to satisfy in even the next couple of years, and then how are they going to go about doing it. It's not going to be the same. I can't tell you exactly what it's going to be. I can tell you one thing. It's not going to be exactly the way we do it today.
Brendan Ryan, former CEO of one of the global marketing firms and now trustee of Catholic Charities. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love. It's been great to talk about your involvement with Catholic Charities, your looking at the future. Thanks for taking the time to
Thanks.
Be with us.
Great to be with you. See ya.
I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a minute or two on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, and this is our weekly conversation on Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. We talk about what the church is doing as an organization, through some of its communities, through some of its people, to make our world a better place. And I'm just delighted that we had the opportunity to speak with Brendan Ryan, who was the chairman of a global marketing firm and is a trustee of Catholic Charities, about Catholic Charities as we celebrate this year in 2017, a legacy of help and a future of hope. That's what we are celebrating, and I'm delighted that we were able to speak with Brendan about that. And in a few minutes, we're going to speak with Bill Baccalini from the New York Foundling, one of those premier Catholic Charities agencies that's been around even longer than Catholic Charities, and about one of their major initiatives, which we're calling a centennial initiative, to help kids in foster care to be successful in college. So I'm delighted that we're able to focus on this today, and hopefully we kind of raise awareness and we kind of are a little interesting for our listeners to learn about some of the things that are happening. Tom, what do we got in terms of news?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Monsignor, this past week, and this has kind of been reported all over, you know, radio, television, newspapers. There was a report that was issued by Oxfam, which is an international global organization that kind of measures any inequality, that basically found that just 8 of the richest people on earth own as much combined wealth, which is approximately $426 billion, as the poorest half of the human race. Now, numbers wise, the poorest half of the human race would be 3.6 billion people, Monsignor. And the list includes some very famous names. Bill Gates is on the top of the list at 75 billion. There is a Spanish magnate who owns Zara's clothing store, who has 67 billion. Warren Buffett has 60 billion. And it goes down the line to Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who has 45 billion, Mark Zuckerberg, of course, of Facebook, 44 million. And at the end of the list, if you're going to be at the bottom of the list, is Michael Bloomberg at 40 billion. And it's very interesting. This is usually published to correspond with the World Economic Forum, which is going on, of course, as some people are aware, in Davos, in Switzerland this week. And they just kind of bring this up to kind of show a juxtaposition about some of the folks who attend Davos and some of the talk that goes on at Davos, to sort of say, let's not forget about those 3.6 billion people on the bottom end of the list.
Yeah, that is an amazing, amazing number. And I think it's a very helpful thing to keep in mind. It doesn't give you the solution, but it does point out that there are a lot of resources in the world, and at least part of the problem of how do we deal with some of that is how do we kind of get the right distribution of the wealth in the world. We have a lot of it, and it's a similar issue on a very, very concrete issue of food, that there is a lot of food production in the world. And it's sometimes hard to get it to the right places. It's complex trying to figure out where the where you kind of distribute the food in a way that it gets to the right places. So it is a stark reminder that there is a tremendous amount of wealth and assets in the world, and there's a tremendous amount of poverty in the world. And somehow, as a world, we got to figure out a better way to kind of get that to happen. So, Tom, thanks for pointing that out to us. Anything else?
Yeah, Monsieur. Well, you know, I mean, it's very interesting. You know, I mean, this, you had mentioned some of the politics that have been going on over the past couple of weeks and it going into the next couple of weeks. And very, very interestingly, actually, today, as we broadcast, today there is a women's march that's going on down in Washington, D.C., that is in response to the inauguration of President Trump. And it was catalyzed by a Facebook page. They're expecting approximately well over 100,000 people to attend. They're trying to say that this would be along the lines of Martin Luther King's March for Jobs and Freedom, moratorium Memorial March in Vietnam or the Million Man March. And so that's going on as we speak. And again, we should also remember that upcoming, just next week on January 27th, is going to be the March for Life, which happens every year. This is the 44th annual one that happens on the anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision, or around the anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. And that's going to be going on, too. And again, they're expecting at that about 100,000 people, too. So this seems to be marching season, Monsignor. I think there's a lot of feet moving and mouths moving too.
Well, I think you point out, and obviously in some of the themes and some of the issues that are being marched for at this time, they are in opposition to each other. And obviously, almost always as part of kind of any women's march movement, there is kind of a theme to protect the right to abortion that tends to be part of the theme. The right to life is a march to say human life at all stages of its existence, even in the womb, needs to be protected. So sometimes these marches have very different themes and very different focuses. One of the things that I think is absolutely critical in the time that we live in is that we have to respect the right of everybody to march and to rally for their own themes, even when they are different than ours, even when we are very much in opposition to some of those values that are there. But we need to respect what people are marching for. And even more so, which is sometimes harder, is I think, my own opinion is, periodically we have to look for those points of commonality in which there are some issues that we can work together on without in any way compromising our firm belief in some of our deep values and our values of life without compromising them, but at the same time recognizing that there is a depth and a range of issues which promote the common good, and some we can work with people on and others we can't work with people on. What I worry about is that we tend to paint our enemies as all black and our friends as all perfect. And the reality is that I'm a firm believer in that part of the gospel which talks about there are weeds and wheat in the world, and sometimes there's good and there's bad, and we kind of have to try to make the good more prevalent and the bad less prevalent. But we got to recognize that we live in a very ambiguous world until the kingdom comes again. And I think, again, as I said before, I do think, unfortunately, some of the rhetoric of the previous campaign doesn't help us to do that, because there's a tendency to want to paint everybody who's not with us as against us, and that's a real difficulty that I think we have. So, you know, Tom, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll speak with Bill Baccalini, who is the CEO and the executive director of the New York Foundling. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And if we all do that, our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is our weekly conversation about some of the things that the church is doing and church-related organizations are doing to make our world more just and more compassionate. Earlier in the show, we were really pleased to speak with Brendan Ryan, a trustee of Catholic Charities and also the chairman emeritus of one of the global marketing firms, to talk about some of the issues about how do you talk about the good that people are doing and how do you do it in a changing world. And we're doing it because this 2017 is Catholic Charities Centennial. And our centennial, we say, is basically a legacy of helping people, but a future of hope for New Yorkers in need. And I am just absolutely delighted that we have with us as our next guest, Bill Baccalini, who is the CEO, the executive director, the chief honcho at the New York Foundling, which is, quite frankly, I would say, one of the premier kind of Catholic Charities affiliated agencies, founded even before Catholic Charities kind of came together formally by the Sisters of Charity in some ways, Bill, what is it, 1869?
1869, 150th is coming up.
Yeah, and so it was, some of that work, as when I was doing a little of the history in the past couple of weeks about the history of Catholic Charities, I discovered that although Catholic Charities was formally established in 1917, some of our most important and most vibrant organizations, they basically go back to that last half of the 19th century, and certainly there's no organization more, more vibrant and more important to the fabric of New York and helping New Yorkers in need than the New York Foundling. And quite frankly, we have none of our Catholic Charities agencies that are better led by their executive director than Bill Baccalini. So I'm delighted that he's with us. But we're not here basically to talk all about that past, because we've been talking about that we're not looking back. We're looking forward. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of need around, and that's yicko. But we got to meet those needs. And so one of the things that we're highlighting that our agencies are doing as a kind of a centennial initiative is something that the Foundling is doing. And Bill, I kind of gave it a name. I may not have given it your name, but I'm calling it Dorming for Success.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. That's
so
good.
I'm calling it Dorming for Success. Yeah. But anyway, Bill, thanks for being with us. And tell us this new initiative. Tell our listeners what's going on.
Monsignor, among all of the obligations that we have to the kids and families we serve, I can't imagine one that's more important than getting them educated. The research is pretty clear. If we can get these young people college degrees, the likelihood that they, going forward, will return to the same social status that they found themselves being raised in is reduced dramatically. So while...
Now, Bill, for the sake of our listeners, the Foundling deals with so many different young people in different situations. We're specifically talking now about, unfortunately, some of those kids who may have been neglected, abused, who wound up in the foster care system. That's who we're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
the kids who find themselves, 18, 19, 20 years old and in the foster care system. The likelihood that their natural parents' rights have been terminated, and they're at the point where, quite frankly, with how dynamic their lives are, it could go either way. So we came up with this idea and approached the city about it, and it's worked pretty well so far.
So our listeners who are throughout the country, give us and give me kind of the basic version of, so what's the program? What is it that you do?
First, I guess it's important that the listeners realize that only about 10% of the kids in foster care go to college, and only about 3% ever graduate. So you do the numbers, and it paints a pretty bleak picture. So what we're doing now, actually on the campus of Queens College in Queens, New York, in a beautiful, beautiful dormitory, is that we're supporting 40 young people who are in foster care in New York City, or and soon to be aging out of foster care, who are attending one of the CUNY colleges. They don't have to be attending Queens College. They just have to be attending one of the Queens College campuses, one of the Queens College schools. And they'll reside at on the Queens College campus in a dormitory called The Summit. And what we do is we realize that there are a myriad reasons why kids in foster care, when they do get to college, don't succeed. They're unable to actually navigate this landscape of independence that college calls for. And so what we do is we actually hire the resident assistants. And unlike when I was a kid or when you were kids, where the resident assistant was a full-time student and they were an RA on the side, our resident assistants are actually full-time employees. They don't take classes at the university, but they're full-time employees. And so, and they're trained in child welfare. So they understand what makes these young people tick. They understand the lives that these kids have had. And so they're in the dorm to help support these kids when these kids are not quite sure how to interpret certain things that a professor might say or that someone who they just encountered on campus might say or do. So we have that there. That plus, I think, Monsignor, and a critical component to this is that our kids have I'm not fond of saying it, but I actually think that it's true, in at least in New York City, and I think across the country, kids that are in foster care wind up attending the most marginal schools, and they tend to be the most marginalized kids in those marginalized schools. And so few of them really come prepared to do college level work. So we assign one-on-one tutors to each of these kids, and it's a requirement of the program. If you're going to participate in the program, you have to accept one-on-one tutoring from our tutors, and it has worked out remarkably. First semester grades are just in. We just finished our first semester of the program, and the grades are in, and we're actually pleasantly surprised by the results.
We're speaking with Bill Baccalini, who is the CEO of the New York Foundling, one of the premier Catholic Charities affiliated agencies, founded by the Sisters of Charity almost 50 years before the formal establishment of Catholic Charities. And we're speaking about a program that Bill initiated with his team at the Foundling in partnership with New York City that is precisely what our centennial is about, looking forward and a real sense of responsibility, because over the years, New York Foundling has probably cared for as many foster care children as almost any other agency in New York City, and realized that unfortunately, for many kids who were not adopted or didn't go back to their own families, as fortunately most children in the foster care system do, realized that they didn't have a future of hope. They had a future of maybe desperation, a future that was pretty bleak and not so hopeful. And so Bill and his team said, okay, what do we do? And has established now this beginning program for 40 kids on a college campus to help them, you know, move forward. And I think, Bill, you know, what you said, I just think it's analytical. I mean, we earlier on, Tom, you know, reported on the fact that a new study out indicates that there are 8 rich people in the world who have almost as much wealth as kind of 2.5 billion people. Yeah. Well, that's, I don't want to condemn people, but we got to recognize that's the reality. And we got to recognize the fact where there are poorer people, the schools don't work as well. There are other problems that are there. And somehow we got to do something to try to create a better future.
Yeah, I mean, we can't, you know, we can advocate all we want, but we can't sit on our hands, and you and I can't allow another generation of young kids that need to go through life without an education, because we know what the future is about if you don't have an education. These kids already have had the source of family support oftentimes pulled out from under them. We got to get them educated, and that's what this program is about. And I'm not interested in being political at all, but let me say this to you, Monsignor. The city of New York has committed 200 beds to this initiative over the next 4 years. And I tell you, the chancellor of CUNY, J.B. Milligan, he is just unbelievably committed to making CUNY much more accommodating and friendly to the kids and families you and I care so deeply about.
So, Bill, that's what I want to talk to you a little bit more about. I want to talk to you about partnership, because you and I have both been in conversations, and you know, to our listeners throughout the country, I think when they think about Catholic Charities, when they think about doing good, you know, maybe their thoughts turn to maybe a food pantry, or maybe they think about that's what charity is about, and it certainly is. But there's a lot more to it, because many of our Catholic charitable agencies are really at the center of what are critical social problems. These are not the easy things that people deal with, where, not to say anything bad, where somebody might need a sandwich or they might need an extra meal. That's legitimate. But these are deep-seated problems that affect communities, neighborhoods, and it requires a sophisticated approach to it. And the word I want to talk about, Bill, is the word partnership. And I'll deal with an issue that I think sometimes I've heard being criticized by nonprofit organizations, Catholic organizations. Well, you know, all you do is work with government money. All you do is, you know, you do government contracts and stuff like that. Now, I don't want to embarrass you, Bill, but this program is only working because you and a lot of the benefactors of the Foundling were willing to commit some private dollars to this. You want to talk about that piece of the partnership?
Yeah, and thanks for raising that, because Lord knows the sisters and the board at the Foundling don't get enough credit. We were so concerned about how few of our kids, and I don't mean our kids, the Foundling kids, right, any young person in foster care, how few of them were going to college. And we were fortunate enough, we sold a building down in the West Village here in New York City. And the minute the board meeting was over, where that was announced that we'd sold this building, the board chair, Bob King, turned to me and said, you know, now we have the money to start doing the things we and the sisters have wanted to do in education. We're doubling down on education. So I approached the city and I said, listen, the Foundling board is willing to commit $1 million to this undertaking, because we feel so firmly that, again, of all of our obligations to these kids, educating them is perhaps the greatest one. So, listen, I'm a big fan of partnerships. I did 20 years in government. Without partnerships, this doesn't work. CUNY couldn't have done this alone. The city couldn't have done this alone. Lord knows the Foundling couldn't have done it alone. But together, we've created something I think is pretty special.
You know, Bill, and one of the things I want to talk about with that partnership is, we talk about partnership as dollars, and you can't do these programs without dollars. That's without a doubt. Anybody who thinks it's just about ideas, they're just not living in the real world. But I also think you can't do it only with dollars. Mm-hmm. And I do think one of the things that, and the Foundling, I think, is a prime example, but I could name 25 other Catholic Charities agencies in New York. One of the things that I think that is brought to the table is credibility, is history, is caring, is being in it for the long term. And that's why I think Catholic Charities agencies tend to be, for the most part, pretty valued partners. Mm-hmm. Because we're there for the long term. We're willing to work with a diverse group of people. And in the world we live in, I think that's even more important.
Yeah, you know, and I think you're right on that. I think you've hit on something, Monsignor. I mean, we tend to be very true. The Catholic charity agencies that I know of,
right,
tend to be very, very transparent, right, and we do what we say we're going to do.
Right. And I think that's absolutely correct. And I think we need it. And again, without being political, but I've said it before and I'll say it again, we live in an awful political environment. We live in an environment in which, if we can find something wrong with somebody we disagree with, that becomes the headline. Not that we look to find something we can work with somebody on. Mm-hmm. We just look to divide and blah, blah, blah. And I get it. Politicians need it to get elected, and they need that. But I'm not going to applaud it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to applaud it. And so I think it's time for our Catholic Charities agencies to basically say, there's a future of hope if we're willing to partner, mm-hmm, and we are willing to partner even with people who we maybe not agree with on everything, or people with whom we may disagree mm-hmm. with on many mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. But that's what we got to do to kind of make the world a better place.
I tell you, if you're willing to look and you're willing to critically examine all these issues, I can't believe you can't find common ground with a person who you thought you never agreed on anything with. There's a ton of common ground. And when it comes to the kids and families that you and I care about, yeah. gosh, there's an awful lot of common ground. And so we have to come together.
You know, one of the things, Bill, if I'd like you to share with our listeners a little bit, because I know this is one of your... things that you are just so much in favor of. Sometimes I think people say about us do-gooders, well, you know, they got good intentions and they're trying to help people, but nothing ever works. It really doesn't work. So is there any, like, do we measure what we do?
Locally here, for your listeners across the country, here in New York City, there's probably no jurisdiction that uses evidence-based practices more aggressively than New York City does.
And let me translate that, Bill, because I've heard that phrase, evidence-based practices. And for our listeners, you know what that means? If it works, you do more of it. If it doesn't work, you stop doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You measure it. You're held accountable. Right. And you know what? I'm not so sure we could have ever afforded it, but we certainly can't afford any longer to do something because we think this or our gut says right. that. We have to. We owe it to these kids. We owe it to those who fund right. us, who pay us to provide these services. We have to measure our outcomes. And you said it perfectly. And if it doesn't work, we discontinue it. And if it works, we try to populate the entire landscape.
So where do you see the future of what I'm calling dorming for success?
Oh, our interest is in establishing a model so that others across the country might replicate it. This thing will not be, I'm not so sure it'll ever be perfect. We'll iron out the kinks. Again, the first semester went better than I could have imagined it would go. But yet enough things happened that we hadn't anticipated that we're making shifts before the spring semester begins. But I think the future for this model, and we're gonna talk about it across the country, and we're hoping other university systems pick it up.
And what do you see as, if there are three pieces to it that you think are the three factors that will make it successful? What do you need to make it successful?
The first thing is do appropriate vetting of the kids in the program. Right. The last thing we need to do is set these kids up for failure yet again. Right. So you have to do appropriate vetting. The other thing is I don't want this to sound curt, but we want these young people to think of themselves as young people who happen to be in foster care, not kids in foster care going to college. And that's important. And the third thing is, no one should look for the credit. The partnerships are about all in this together. We come together with one goal in mind, and that's getting these young people educated.
Bill, thank you. But thank you not for being a guest on the show. I'm grateful for that. But thank you for your leadership. Thank you for the leadership of the Foundling, the Sisters of Charity. This is just a tremendous initiative to basically say there aren't throwaway kids.
No.
There are kids who maybe have had problems, and there is a future of hope for them, and you're providing that hope. So thank you so much.
Monsignor, thanks for having me on. Thank you.
Bill Baccalini, the CEO of the New York Foundling, and somebody who has really been involved in setting policy in government, and now with this Dorming for Success program, is basically saying that some of the more difficult kids who unfortunately maybe have had really significant issues of abuse and neglect in their lives, that some of them are going to have a brighter future because of that. So I am delighted that as we've been able to kind of talk today, what we've really demonstrated, I think, that people need to be in this together, that we had Brendan Ryan, who is kind of former CEO of a major global marketing firm, and now he is kind of contributing his resources, his insight to help kind of move the needle on creating a world in which more people are helped in so many different ways. And we've had the example of Bill Baccalini and the Foundling, who is doing their job to move things forward. So I kind of think that what we need to do, even in an environment which I think is pretty gloomy at times, some of the rhetoric which is inexcusable, some of the disrespect and the divisiveness that we hear all the time, is that doesn't exempt us from doing our part to make the world more just and more compassionate. And sometimes I think we just allow those noises to kind of deafen us to so much good that's actually being on. And that's not being naive. That's just really saying there's a lot going on in the world, in our families, in our own lives, in the organizations that are doing so much good. And that's a very, very kind of important thing to do. So we talk about helping people. We talk about giving hope. Thanks for joining us on Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back again next week on Just Love on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.